Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah, they have asked for that, really.
You can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to leave it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
Okay, you've more than likely seen the gif of Alex Ferguson and Kenny Dalglish's contrasting reactions to the fifth goal at Old Trafford yesterday. Ferguson looking absolutely horrified, puffing the cheeks out, shaking his head. Then the camera cuts immediately to Dalglish, laughing his head off and muttering something along the lines of fucking hell. It was a nice piece of work, I must say, by the television match director, who did not stop there. We were treated to images of stunned United fans ambling out late for the second half, only to be met with the news that they'd conceded a fifth. Then the brutal simplicity of a lingering shot of the scoreboard reading Manchester United 0, Liverpool 5. And shortly after, the wide shots from outside the ground of some United fans heading for home. I think that might have been actually just after the Pogba sending off. There was a lot to work with yesterday for the TV director, let's be fair. And whoever did it, did a fine job in milking the moment for all it was worth. Welcome to your Bank Holiday Monday podcast. Hi, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
Pretty shocked. Am I shocked? Like, in a way, I'm not. I mean, this could always have potentially happened. For some reason, the fifth goal did it for me more than
that was the most amazing moment. Also, I felt
so?
I can't believe 5 minutes into the second half and here we are again.
Completely, you get to restart. You get to, everything should kick in. Just a bit of tactical switching around, a bit of professional pride, just the nature that of things when a team usually takes its foot off the gas on the other side. All those things. So you're expecting maybe to, I could have thought there might be another goal or two, but it might take a while. Then suddenly it hits five, and you know, as everyone keeps saying, fair play to Jurgen Klopp for laying off at that point and not subjecting them to a 10-0 win, which might have definitely cost Ole Gunnar Solskjaer his job. But yeah, the fifth goal was a bit of a stunner.
Yeah, I mean, and there have been a lot of stunning moments. But you know, Solskjaer even said afterwards, he said this thing where he was asked, at what point did it just become damage limitation? And he's like, 4-0, because at that point it becomes, you've got to score more than one goal every 15 minutes, which in itself is just, we could spend the whole show analysing why Solskjaer thinks that. Like, why? Like, we can produce a goal every 15 minutes. That's realistic. But more than that, and you know, puffs out cheeks. Oh, you're asking a lot now, boss. But 4-0. So he said that was the moment at which it became damage limitation. And I guess then he took off Greenwood, and you know, which was a questionable substitution as well. And he puts on Pogba, and so the point. And then literally, what happens is Pogba loses the ball, and Liverpool score fifth goal. And you know, even right up until the moment when Salah took his last touch, it was a surprise that one ended up going in, because I honestly thought, like, the you know, Henderson got the ball, and you know, it's still not that dangerous a situation, but Henderson produces a fantastic pass, you know, curving it sort of outside into the path of Salah, but then Salah runs in and takes a heavy touch. You're like, well, he's lost the chance. The guy just stands there. You know, do you remember last season? It was Henderson who played in that when Manchester United lost 4-2 at home to Liverpool in an empty stadium. Henderson was the goalkeeper, and you remember Salah scored a goal right at the end, where Henderson was criticized, and there was all these little you know, memes about Henderson where they'd like shrunk him down to the size of
him
a pixie.
Looking small and all those
things. Or like, you know, they put him like the pixie sized Henderson was standing like 3 yards to the right of the goal frame, you know, like he just wasn't anywhere near the goal, all that kind of stuff. But De Gea was just standing there as well. And when Salah took that heavy touch, you think, well, that's cost him the chance. And then it's in, you know, and you just, it was honestly almost beyond belief at that point. And then you're thinking, well, how bad is this going to get? And you saw Robertson, I mean, I didn't notice at the time, but Robertson was shouting to the players, you know, keep going, be ruthless. But that's not what happened. They seemed to, at that point, say, well, look, when I say that's, I actually don't think Liverpool changed their approach that much. There is this idea that they took their foot off the gas, which I guess they did at some point. But I think United's foot was off the gas at this point. And United's foot being on the gas had actually been a huge driver of what happened in the game.
Okay, well, I'll let you hang on. Hold your thought there for a second. I just want to tell people that Dion Fanning is coming up off the currency, and Mark Critchley, who covers Man United for The Independent, they're going to be talking about this absolutely extraordinary game yesterday. This is your only podcast today on Bank Holiday Monday. We'll have a GAA pod out tomorrow for World Service members. Proposal B got routed almost as emphatically as United did at Ultra. Well, it actually won. I mean, it won more than 50% of the votes, but nowhere near the 60% it needed. So we're going to be talking to Oisin and Jamie Wall on all that tomorrow. To hear that one, you'll need to be signed up to the World Service. Secondcaptains.com, £5 a month plus VAT, depending on where in the world you're living. Now, Ken, off you go.
Well, Owen, where do you start? I mean, have you ever seen anything like that before? I have seen things like this before. I've seen something very like this, actually, 7 years ago in Belo Horizonte, when Brazil played Germany in the World Cup semi-final. And it turned out to be a match very much like the one that we saw yesterday. I remember how the whole place, the Mineirao Stadium, seemed almost threatened to crumble to the floor. Such was the energy and passion of the Brazilian fans as they belted out the anthem. The reddened and tear-streaked faces of the Brazilian players as they held aloft the shirt of their wounded talisman, Neymar. And the way in which they hurled themselves forward, impaling themselves on the spikes of the waiting German porcupine, it really was, you know, what it has is the same quality of like a team trying to prove the people who were talking shit about it wrong. And the Brazilian, you know, the Brazilian team, who I think probably knew Germany were better than them, thought they were going to be able to just batter Germany down just by wanting it more and by being Brazilian. We are Brazil. And in the same way, I think that Man United thought they were going to go out there and do a We Are Man United on Liverpool. Now, the thing that makes this so, the thing that gives it the slightly uncanny quality is the actual prophecy issued by Paul Scholes on television. The toe-sucking soothsayer.
Paul the Octopus, Ken. Paul the Octopus. If we remember our friend from the Octopus from the 2006 World Cup.
Yeah. This prophecy was a bit more detailed than Paul. I mean, if I remember, Paul the Octopus just sort of reached the tentacle over to like box A or box B, and that.
Yeah, got it right every time, though.
Yeah, he did. That's true. He did. He did well. Scholes doesn't get it right every time, but on this occasion, he really got it right. I mean, we'll listen to what he had to say.
First half, United were all over the place. They were disjointed. They had the two midfield players playing on their own. Now, if you do that against Manchester City or Liverpool, half-time, it'll be 3-0 or 4-0. You'll be out of the game. You're not coming back. And yeah, it's great watching, seeing the excitement and seeing the United way, all the smiles on their face, all the attacking, all the goals, all the shooting, all the crosses. It's brilliant. I know that. But that first half just stuck with me.
But when you've only won 1 in 5, to win in that manner with that atmosphere and that reaction, I mean, look at, you know, Cristiano.
When you say win in that manner, they've come back from 2-0.
Yeah.
Great spirit, yeah, great fighting spirit. They conceded still so many chances. Now, if you're playing against quality players, there's no way you're winning that game. Not a chance you're winning that game. And now everyone will get a little bit carried away with this euphoria. Now, will he play that way on Sunday against Liverpool? It was that brilliant. It was that good. Everyone's smiling. Everyone's happy. Go and do that on Sunday against Liverpool. See what happens.
So the warning was there. I mean, it was pretty clear. You know, Captain Smith of the Titanic also ignored warning. I think he was warned 7 times on about ice. People kept sending out warnings. I've seen a lot of icebergs. Careful, icebergs. But he wanted to break the speed record or something like this, or, you know, he had to go to a dinner party. There were various reasons why he didn't give those warnings the attention that he should. In Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's case, it's not as though Manchester United aren't aware of the things that are said about them. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is hyper aware of everything Paul Scholes would have said about him on in a nationally televised, or said about the team. It wasn't as though he was just talking about Solskjaer. Will have said in that in the televised address. If anything, United seem to me like a team that's too aware or like too responsive to what's being said. Like, look at some of the stuff. Like, I see Luke Shaw coming out after that game and he does an interview like, we're too easy to play through. And I'm like, are you literally just using the phrases from Monday Night Football? You know what I mean? It's just like the same. At least try and find a different way to phrase what you're saying there. You know, it's almost as though you, it's like, what was the quote from Luke Shaw? Not good enough. I know it's a team sport. As individuals, we need to be accountable. That's why I'm out here now. I'm not hiding in there and not speaking. I've come out and will say I was not good enough. I speak on behalf of myself, not the team. I'm accountable for my performance. I'm not here to speak about the team. We know we can be better. I know I need to be better. That's why I have come here speaking to you to tell you as it is. You're just like, why is this weird ritual, like, self-abasement happening? What's the point of this? It seems to be, as far as I can see, because it was suggested on TV that the players need to come out and front up. The players, why? Why do the players need to? That's not the players' job, is to play the matches, not sell the disaster. Their job isn't.
Yeah, but they are also.
These guys aren't like special advisors to some, like, thick of it Tory minister. You know, where they're like, oh, you know, what are we going to say? Like, what's the line? You know, this is absolute bollocks. Like, just. Like this, I honestly kind of don't understand. Then he comes out with the phrase of, you know, we're too easy to play through against. Look at the first goal. It can't be possible they have 3 running through in the first 5 minutes. We need to be more compact. We need to be better. Yeah, that's very true. And Luke Shaw was the only player left, as there was 3. I mean, there was Salah, there was Keita who scored, there was Robertson also on the other side.
Now, that one was not on Luke Shaw, and Luke Shaw knows that. Luke Shaw was let down by a systems failure there and some individual errors, and was left like going, ah, shit, what do? I mean, Salah will probably go himself, so I have to cover that. But no, he's going to play through to Keita.
But it was just so crazy. The goal is one of the craziest things I've ever seen, and it was right there in the beginning of the game, and it was, you know, let's run, let's charge, you know, we press. Like Solskjaer was saying, like, Solskjaer had been issued this warning by Paul Scholes, right? It's not the Scholes gets everything right. It's not like when Scholes says something, you better be like, Scholes, he's never been wrong. We better do as he says. It's not like that, okay? Scholes, he's been wrong loads. And loads of Man United fans are like, we don't like this guy anymore, Scholes. Well, we'll always love what he did as a player, but my God, he's negative about Manchester United, right? You know, he moans and whinges all the time. But on this occasion, though, he's saying, if you do this, it's going to be really risky. Solskjaer seemed to spend the next few days talking himself into doing it. Like, say, his pre-match press conference for this game, a lot of it was talking about Ronaldo's unbelievable physical dynamism. You know, his sprints, his intensity. Like, they'd obviously assembled some stats. You know, Jeff Shreves was putting the same stats to Ronaldo. I don't know if you saw the interview Shreves did with Ronaldo. Ronaldo's like, I don't care about criticism, you know, and then spent like 10 minutes talking about how little he cares about criticism. And Shreves was like, well, you know, your sprints and your high-intensity runs are second only to Mo Salah, you know. And Ronaldo's like, yeah, oh, shucks, yeah, that is true. But you're like, this isn't really the point, though, of what we're talking. We're not talking about, like, does Ronaldo still run when he thinks there might be a chance of connecting with a cross? We're talking about, does he work for the team? You know, does he work for the team, particularly when you haven't got the ball? And the answer to that is still no, despite, you know, you can try and sort of persuade yourself that that's the case. But what's the alternative? You know, the alternative is to drop him. And that's basically something that Ronaldo, or Solskjaer rather, was not prepared to do. You know, he's won these games before, but the format that he's used to win the games did not involve having you know, a 36-year-old forward sort of walking around and waiting while the other team has the ball. It was like a lot of guys running as hard as they could. A lot of quick guys as well. That was always a big feature of it. And now instead, it's sort of Ronaldo. So are you going to sort of just close your eyes to that and say, well, you know, I think we can get away with it? As it turns out, that is what Solskjaer decided was the path of least resistance. He decided, look, let's just go with it. We are Manchester United. You know, we played really well against Atalanta. We our XG was over 3 in the game. Sure, theirs was about 1.4, sure. But, you know, I mean, the chances they had were point blank. That's a misleading figure. You know, we can go out there and do this. We are Man United. You know, we are Brazil. And it didn't work out.
I read your piece this morning, Ken. And I think you might mention Scholes in the piece. You mentioned somebody else as well, though. The person who got this whole ball rolling last week. The hero, Liverpool's hero, Brendan Rodgers. Might just have done the greatest service to Liverpool Football Club that he's ever done, including his time as manager.
Well, this is why I get the sense of United sort of responding to provocation. You know, like being a sort of a wounded animal in the footballing cliche. That the provocation, all of the shit talk, all of the trash talk, all of the disrespect was playing into their performance and was coming out in this passionate sort of response to Liverpool. And I think Rodgers, I mean, obviously the 4-2 win is the 4-2 defeat to Leicester is provocative enough. But then Rodgers basically come out and saying, well, you know, they didn't press, so it was pretty easy for us, you know. I mean, he throws down a gauntlet to these players. It's like, well, you know, what are you going to do? And what do you see for that first little goal? It's Bruno Fernandes leading the charge. Come on, lads, let's go. And then for some reason, everybody following Greenwood. Okay, it's one thing for Greenwood. Maybe you should be a bit closer to the player you're trying to press here. But then Wan-Bissaka, you've run up to the right wing. You've run up to the right wing to try to stop a ball but you're not close enough to do it. The ball, like Robertson, if you look at that, it goes Alisson, who's being, Bruno's closing him down, to Van Dijk. Greenwood's closing him down. Van Dijk, a simple pass to Robertson because he's got loads of time. Robertson can control the ball, turn, look up, see Wan-Bissaka running towards him. Now, that's not a press. You know, that's just, this is like a, you know, it's like, this is just headless chicken stuff. Like, there's no way that, the whole point is that the player doesn't have time to turn. Like, that's the point of sort of pressing him. That's how, like, you know, just running in and putting pressure on an opponent who's actually engaged in trying to do something different, something technically difficult, like controlling and turning. You put the pressure on at that moment, you might win the ball. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's how this works. It's not a case of, once he's got time to turn and you're still not there in front of him, you're not even blocking the pass. He wasn't even blocking the pass up the line. You know, he's just running and so he's now out of the game. The ball goes up to Jota and Lindelof, the centre back, is now over by the right touchline, marking Jota. Jota plays it in inside first time. So he's now gone. There's two defenders left. Maguire comes running up towards Firmino. Again, he's too late. Firmino's able to put it past him really easily. There's now one defender left. That man is Luke Shaw. Now, okay, there could have been some other players running back. I mean, because Robertson, you can see that he's sort of running through. He's been able to run. Why have these United players not been able to run? But it doesn't really matter. The way that move had unfolded, you could have some midfielders making runs back for show. They wouldn't be able to affect what actually happens, which is Keita outflanking the Man United defence right through the middle of the pitch.
But are you saying that every one of those decisions was a bad decision and a mistake by each player, or was it basically a systems failure, or maybe one person, Bruno, initially making the wrong decision and then there being a natural knock-on effect of that?
I don't think Bruno is necessarily making the wrong decision, but it's like they're trying to do this thing that they're being accused of not being able to do, but executing it so badly that what they actually end up doing is completely vacating their own defences. They get dragged into the machinery of this awful, inevitable, literally getting dragged into the cogs of some awful heavy machinery, which just grinds now, and now you can't control what's happening. You're just being pulled through. That's the whole team just got pulled out to the right. But it's not even as though they got, you know, like there's this whole idea with pressing, you know, baiting teams into sort of, you know, pressing traps, getting them to sort of try and press you in areas where you want them to, and then suddenly exploiting the space they've left behind. Is that what Liverpool were doing there, or were they just trying to play the ball out from the back in a normal way? And United were just rushing at them like headlong and creating this unbelievable overload at the back. And then after that, you know, we just had a sequence of mistakes. I mean, I think like United didn't sort of keep up that pressing. It was as though they thought, oh no, you know, that what a disaster. Like we've, because it's so embarrassing for a team to concede a goal like that. It's like the other team is laughing at them. What happened there? You ran off to the side and out of our way. Then Liverpool keep scoring the same goal, sort of getting around the same side of the defence. You know what I mean? If Luke Shaw comes out and fronts up, I mean, it's not an individual thing. But for some reason, the defence did tend to find itself a long way over to one side, leaving a lot of space on the right/centre, you know, as Liverpool are looking at it off the box. They didn't continue to sort of do their high press because they realised they couldn't do it. Like, if you look at the pressing figures, it dropped off practically to nothing. After that, and I think that has a lot to do with why you know, at 5-0 we could say, well, Liverpool stopped playing at 5-0 or didn't really go for it, but it was really that the game, that everybody sort of stopped running in the game. You know, United weren't trying to, United weren't running forward at all, and Liverpool were waiting for them to do something to see if they could exploit it, but they didn't.
The Pogba sending off might have actually helped United, because at that point it's like, okay, we can't actually, I think Harry Maguire said it afterwards, we can't really go forward anymore. Yeah. So might have helped limit the damage in a bizarre kind of a way. But if your theory is true, Ken, that they were baited into it by Brendan Rodgers or by Paul Scholes or whoever, it's, it reminds me of the 1991 Rugby World Cup final when England were playing Australia and David Campese, who played for Australia, was saying, oh yeah, no, England, great, yeah, good team, yeah, yeah, big bunch of meatheads, yeah. No, I love their attritional style, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it'd be lovely to see them come out and play some real rugby, you know, that'd be amazing. Yeah. But listen, what they're doing is great. And of course, then England come out and try to play, and Campese and Australia have a field day. So.
Really, I feel as though that was a big part of it. And you know, so it kind of always comes back then to the manager and what he's made a terrible mistake. You know, he's kind of allowed himself to kind of give in to this fantasy. We've got Ronaldo, we are Man United, it'll all be okay.
We're Man fucking United!
You know, we don't need to sort of do the things that we've previously always done when I've won big games at this club, because he has obviously won big matches before. Instead, let's.
But he can't do those things. So, with Ronaldo on the pitch, he can't. But we're basically blaming Ronaldo. Like, there were a lot of problems with yesterday's performance. I mean, Pogba was shocking when he came on for his 15 minutes. Maybe we can't really blame Pogba considering they're already 4-0 down.
Yeah,
but I mean, Maguire. Like, come on, Harry Maguire was.
Maguire was absolutely appalling. You know, I mean, he was terrible. I mean, he was nutmegged on one of the goals. He was sort of blundering around. He risked a red card with a sort of foul in the second half. It was shocking. But I still feel as though this starts from the front. It starts with the basic attitude of the team. And I feel as though the attitude of the team was this like kind of bravado, this sort of let's get out there and show them what Man United is all about. You know, let's play Man United football. You know, literally that vague. Let's be on the front foot. You know, that's we're going to go out there and dominate. You know, this was I'm quoting from Solskjaer's pre-match interview, you know. And then, like, I see afterwards, oh, Solskjaer has spent 10 minutes in taking selfies and signing autographs, you know, even despite that. I'm like, of course he has. You can't afford to rush off today. All that, you know, if you saw John Delaney has spent 10 minutes buying drinks for supporters, would you be like, oh, you know, well, that shows the class of the man.
Well, some supporters did feel that for a while before many of them.
Well, a lot of those who got drinks were inclined to give Delaney a temporary amnesty. it is true. But, you know, like it was such a shambles. You know, like they're 5-0 down, they're a man down. The camera's showing, you know, Donny van de Beek, he's got his he's just looking out with his eyes over his over his jacket because maybe he doesn't want everyone to see this smirk on his face. I'm not suggesting he was. I'm just saying he must defend the whole situation. Pretty funny. You got Jadon Sancho sitting there like this, the big signing of the summer, just sidelined, this weird flop now. Can't get in the team. Everyone's watching Ronaldo, but he's made the team clearly worse. You know, the manager is like can't drop him. It appears, you know what I mean. Like maybe you think I'm wrong to go to Ronaldo so much here, or to sort of point to him so much. But I do feel as though that's like it's becoming clear that was a massive a fork in the road for the club, and they went the wrong way. Mm. They were things were actually coming together. They could look at last season and say, we've had a good season here. You know what I mean? We've finished second. We've had a lot of problems. Every team has. The points total wasn't great, but you know, we've done better than 18 of the other teams, and we've got young players, we've got developing players. We feel as though we're going to get better. And then they suddenly bring in this guy.
But we are speaking of the aftermath of the emotion of what happened yesterday. I mean, he did score a winner during the week. We know this United team are never going to be, they're never going to be a Man City or a Chelsea or a Liverpool with that sort of tactical acumen. We know that they are a team.
Well, why
that
shouldn't
needs,
they be?
Well, their manager doesn't seem to have it.
Well, that's, I mean,
the
that's
the
problem.
The players don't seem to want to buy into whatever they're supposed to be doing. But the point he's going to make was they're a team, as everyone says, of star players who can produce individual moments of brilliance. And if that's what they're going to be, you're nearly maxing it out by getting Ronaldo in. He's kept up his end of the bargain in terms of scoring these big goals. So, I don't know.
No, it's a running game. Like, it's a running game now more than ever. And, you know, you bring in a guy who can't run. And I mean, the results since he arrived, they've lost more games than they've won. You know, I mean, he arrived, he played in the game against Newcastle. That's his first game, right? I mean, he scored a couple of goals. The next game they lost to Young Boys. He scored in that game as well. They lost to West Ham. I don't think he played in the EFL Cup. I can't remember if he played in that, but they lost.
No,
that. They beat West Ham 2-1 as well. But remember, West Ham were leading in that game. They came back to win. West Ham missed the penalty late. They lost to Villa. He did play in that. They missed the penalty themselves. Ronaldo let Bruno take it. They beat Villarreal 2-1. But remember, Villarreal took the lead there, and that was another late winner by Ronaldo. They drew with Everton 1-1. He came on as a sub there. They lost to Leicester 4-2. They beat Atlanta, obviously having been 2-0 down, and they've lost 5-0 to Liverpool. So it's 5 defeats since he arrived. He hasn't played in every one of those, and only 4 wins and a draw. Now, that's a disastrous run of form. You know what I mean? That's the worst. Is it the worst run of form? I haven't actually looked at it, but I mean, I can't remember them having a run that bad at any point last season, and you know, they did have some bad results. It's a disaster. It's a disaster, and it's a disaster that hasn't just affected. I mean, look at the other players who are sitting out. You know, Cavani is sitting out, Sancho, as I mentioned, like whatever plan there was has gone up in smoke, and now there's the, you know, what else do we see in the game? You know, Pogba's
cameo.
I mean, you know, I'm wondering, what are the long-term impacts of this going to be? Because in previously, you've seen like things go wrong, and sort of every Ole Solskjaer just sort of studiously avoids criticizing anybody, and then it waits for it to blow over, and it does. And you know, Greenwood and Rashford score goals, and they win the next away game, and suddenly people forget, people move on. You know, but this just is one of those. I wonder, does it have longer-term effects? Like I can't see how Solskjaer can really continue there now. Like, I don't feel as though his credibility can recover from a game like that. I just don't see it. You know, I mean, we've seen it seems as though calling for a manager to be sacked, or, you know, saying a manager, you know, should be sacked effectively, that this manager is not good enough and they should get a new manager. So you're effectively saying a manager should be sacked. This is almost like some...
Well, it's bizarre because, you know, Neville and Carragher were whatever about Neville. Even Carragher's tying himself up and not saying, I'd never call for a manager to be sacked, but this manager is not good enough for this club and they should get a better manager. It's like, okay,
you all know what you're saying there.
Yeah, maybe just say, but yeah,
and Neville, should get co-managers or?
Yeah, the old Roy Evans-Udie thing. But then, Neville obviously is still sort of sticking by his mate.
Well, he's always stuck by the manager. I mean, he's doing this even back in the day.
I've seen Jose Mourinho come into this club and Louis van Gaal and been wholly disappointed.
Gary, you say that all the time. Just because a manager before, a great manager's failed, doesn't mean you shouldn't be looking, whether now or in the summer,
Jamie,
to get a manager who's got a great
CV. Let me speak as a Manchester United fan. I never asked for an Atkinson to be sacked as a fan
growing
up.
I'm not asking for you.
He wanted Big Ron to, you know, if Neville had his way, Big Ron would still be the manager. You know, 50 years later, it's only 40 years.
Unfortunately, Neville was just too young to keep Dave Sexton in a job. You know?
Yeah. Or, well, he did. Sorry, he did. He actually does have his own club now, where he occasionally does sack the manager, as he referred to.
I sacked a manager last season after 6 games. It was the wrong thing. It was the wrong thing to do. I should have waited to the end of the season and let it breathe. And I think that's what Manchester United will do.
Yeah, I mean, it was wrong. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was. But like, this idea that it's always wrong is clearly not true. I mean, look at Liverpool. You know, it's 6 years ago that they sacked Rodgers at around this point in the season and appointed Klopp. You know, since when they've never looked back. Like, it's the best decision. It's the best decision that the owners at Liverpool have made since they took over the club. Literally, you know, sacking the manager and getting in a better one. Like, it's so clear. I mean, the question, I suppose, is who would you go for? And, you know, Antonio Conte, I hate to play so much level, but just a quick, what do you have to say about Conte? He had this objection.
Yeah, but my point is Jose Mourinho was the best manager in the world when he came to Manchester United. He was the best manager in the world. And he didn't do it here. They've got that experience at this club.
So Manchester United shouldn't look for the best manager in the world.
Conte's
because
available.
Of Mourinho.
Conte's available, but I won't bring him to Manchester United. I wouldn't bring him here now. I wouldn't.
Why?
I don't think he's a fit for Manchester United. I don't think he's a fit. I might be wrong. They might bring him here tomorrow. I'd get behind him. But I don't think he's a fit. Which is the coach with a specific style like...
He's not a fit? I mean, what is that? I don't know. I was trying to think... I was trying to, you know, to give him credit, like, just to try to figure out what does he mean. And is it something to do with, like, Conte's history of bust-ups with the board? You know, at Juventus, they lost to Bayern in the Champions League. I remember him saying, well, when you have 10 euros, you cannot eat in a 100 euro restaurant. He says this about, the club of the Agnellis, and was sacked soon after. And obviously at Chelsea, fell out with Abramovich. At Inter, has left after winning the league, but that has to do, I think, with a more general collapse rather than any specific falling out with the owners, although I think he did fall out with them. So is that it? Like, you, I imagine, you know, you need a manager who doesn't fall out with the owners. I think that's a silly objection, you know, to be honest, because if you're an Inter fan or a Chelsea fan, you know, say, are you thinking, God, I wish Antonio Conte hadn't come to this club? I don't think so. Like, if you look at Chelsea now, I think what they're about sort of... I mean, what they're playing in a way now, which is actually quite similar to Conte's system when he was there. You know what I mean? I think he... The question that I would have about Conte for Manchester United is that with the style of play he has used at his last two clubs, Chelsea and Inter, I don't think it's a very well-suited style for the squad that's currently at Manchester United. Because if you look at United's squad, what seems to me to be its biggest... plus point is this array of, you know, it's like Greenwood and Rashford, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But where did they fit into Conte's system, which is the 3-5-2? You know, he uses two really attacking wing backs. You know, he uses a defensive midfielder and two sort of number eights. That he doesn't use a Bruno style number 10. That player doesn't exist in his team. And then he uses strikers who he likes to be, you know, strong guys. You know, not sort of more Edinson Cavani a few years ago than, say, Mason Greenwood today, I would say would be Conte's idea of a striker. As for Ronaldo, I don't know. I'm sure he respects what Ronaldo's done in the game, as we all do. But is he the kind of player that Conte would want when it's so important to have this? As Rodgers was saying... on Saturday, the sort of pressing is how you kind of channel your aggression into the game. Like, that's how the team sort of begins to work together as a team and impose itself on the game. It's through basically pressing. If you've got someone who doesn't do that, then you're kind of like, well, where do we even start with this? So look, I don't know. I think there will be big reverberations from this. My feeling is surely United have to recognize that they're not going anywhere. You know, it's been long, like, it's been so long. You know, how long can you realistically spend steadying the ship? How long can you look at this and say, well, you know, at least everyone isn't killing each other the way they were with Mourinho? If it continues with form like that for much longer, I'll tell you, it's not going to take much longer before they are.
No, I know. I mean, this idea that it goes to the rest of the season, I don't understand that, because even if you were writing off the season, which is nonsensical anyway, and looking ahead to the future, you'd still want somebody in now, and they can identify what the issues are. Actually, our hero of the hour, Brendan Rodgers, annoyed a lot of Celtic fans by leaving when he did mid-season, but he got into Leicester, saw what they needed, and then was able to do whatever he needed to do, had a whole pre-season, was ready to go for the start of the next season. I think I've heard him talk about that before, where it was a decision he just had to make, and it worked out really well. So anyway, that's that. I do just want to, before we go to the two guys, maybe a quick word on Mo Salah. I mean, bloody hell. I know it was a heavy touch, and De Gea should have come out and all, but it was still a lovely finish. He's just the second goal. I mean, he's just unbelievable.
Also, the play for the first was really good. I mean, he's just absolutely on fire.
He was funny afterwards. Actually, the first goal, Jeff Shreve's asked him about his goal scoring. You know, 10 in a row, hat trick at Old Trafford, first player to do that in Premier League era from the opposition. And he said, "Yeah, but I mean, of course, I'm trying to do everything for the team and assists. You know, I gave the first one to Keita. I mean, I could have scored that one too."
Well, how, you know, every week, like, he's playing at the moment, like, his wages are going up by, like, 50 grand. You know what I mean? Like, every game. Like, it's been this unbelievable sequence of, I mean, the stunning goal against Man City, the similar goal against Watford, the quite similar goal against Atletico. You know, this is just this sequence of you know, incredible football. And then, okay, a hat trick. The first, I felt sorry for old Dennis Bailey. Surely, how did he not get a mention? Like, no one gets a mention if it's not the Premier League on Sky. Surely you remember Dennis Bailey on? I remember it was New Year's Day, 1992. I was a little nipper down in my granddad Kavanagh's house watching the game, Man United against QPR. And boy, were we surprised when Manchester United lost the game 4-1 with Dennis Bailey, who I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Do you remember him?
I had totally forgotten this until you brought it up. Yeah, yeah.
I think he chipped Schmeichel. I think it was one of those times Schmeichel got chipped. Phenomenal performance by him.
Just did it a year too early again.
It was 1992, so it doesn't exist. It's the first hat trick ever by a visiting player at Old Trafford in the Premier League era, and the first since Ronaldo in 2003, Ronaldo and Nazario for Real Madrid. So that's the kind of contextualized achievement. Now, in a sense, like, I mean, you know, I don't want to downplay what Salah did, but like, when Ronaldo did it, he was up against the better United team that were a little bit more kind of together in what they were doing than the team that Mo Salah did it against. But it is a historic achievement, and well done to him on equaling Ronaldo and Dennis Bailey.
Dion and Mark coming right up.
For fuck's sake!
We need to get back to facts here, because there seems to be a bit of emotion creeping in. What you just said really isn't true.
Well, no. No, what I said... I'm not saying...
I don't know what you're saying, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I mean, all I
make this point.
If you found someone on the street...
Am I interviewing you? Or are you interviewing me? He's a god, he's a god, he's a
man, he's a guru. You cheeky bastard. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic
plan, designed and directed by his red right hand.
Let me finish.
What happened to Chelsea?
For fuck's sake.
Well, this is going splendidly, everybody.
Put the cameras up if you want. Let's have a chat. Everybody would think that the appointment of Jose Mourinho would have been a great appointment for Manchester United to win trophies. That they would win trophies under Jose Mourinho.
Well, I don't think everybody would have thought that, but I think somebody who didn't know a lot about football would have thought that.
What, the Manchester United? Jose Mourinho?
Yeah.
You cheeky bastard.
For fuck's sake.
You cheeky bastard.
For fuck's sake.
Dion Fanning and Mark Critchley are tasked with talking about what happened yesterday at Old Trafford. Dion, Manchester United, bloody hell.
Yeah. Well, it is extraordinary that on a day when we saw probably one of the finest performances in the history of the Premier League and one of Liverpool's greatest ever performances, that it is a story about Manchester United. It does kind of indicate the drift, I guess, in the club, and the sense, you know, watching it sort of play out in real time yesterday from sort of half time, when it's like, will Solskjaer be manager for the second half? To, you know, the end of the evening with Gary Neville insisting that he's, you know, tried to, not quite, but like give, you know, build, give him a new contract.
I stuck by Big Ron Atkinson, and I'm sticking by.
As an 11-year-old, I refused to call for Ron Atkinson's head. So now, as one of the most highly paid pundits on British television, I will hold to that position.
Amazing stuff, Mark. I don't even know if it does annoy Liverpool fans that we're focusing more on Man United. I think maybe they're happy enough to laugh at what's going on at United as well. But I mean, what is your biggest takeaway from what happened yesterday?
I mean, like, so recently we've been saying how difficult it is to say anything new about this United team and Solskjaer, because we've been having the same arguments for like nearly 3 years now. And yesterday, I guess the only new thing that I felt about it was just kind of a bit of pity, if you like, for his situation and his position, because it didn't feel like a Premier League game as much. It just felt like a ritual humiliation. I mean, he was basically being bullied by the Liverpool fans at the end. And you say that they wouldn't want to hear us maybe talk about United. They were quite happy to revel in the performance themselves yesterday. So I'm sure they're absolutely fine with it, to be honest, because... what can you say? What new can you say? I mean... I think whatever arguments you have about the players that have been brought in, about Ronaldo, about all this stuff, you'd look at that squad, and it comes down to these basic facts in the end. You look at that squad and you'd say it's better than last season, but the team's playing worse. And who does that come down to? It's a coaching issue. Last week, I obviously did the Atalanta game and then was in Solskjaer's press conference on Friday. And he was like... almost paying a bit of lip service to the idea that that could have been another turning point and it could have been something for them to rally around. I think he said it'd be the start of something big, were his actual words. And it was obviously the start. It was the start of something big. It was Liverpool's biggest ever win at Old Trafford. But the difference for me last week leading up to the game yesterday was just that all that talk of anything being a turning point anymore just rings hollow, because... we've seen it before. We've seen what happens. We always know that a result like this is around the corner, but yesterday was just on a different, to a different degree of embarrassment and humiliation, of which I'd like to say, well, it feels natural to say that it's difficult to see where he goes from here, but I mean, we just know that it persists. It just carries on. So whether anything will actually change remains to be seen.
Surely, Mark, though, that has been the theme of a lot of, you know, as you were saying, like the difficulty of finding new things to say. But, I suppose that comes down to the kind of the irrelevance of any one result against the sort of bigger picture. And usually what's happened, it's not, so this is the first time even that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team has lost by five at home. You know, it happens like last season, but there wasn't anyone there that time. Like, were you at the 6-1?
Yeah.
You were one of the few, right?
Yeah.
So what's the difference between losing 6-1 in an empty stadium and losing 6-1 in a stadium that began as full?
5-0 yesterday.
Five. I know they were sort of different games as well, but the Spurs game was real sort of paddling as well, you know? Like, they were losing by a big scoreline for a long time. It was pretty humiliating. But why would yesterday's one have been any different?
I think it's different in the sense that so first of all, with the Tottenham one, I mean, that was on the weekend. It was basically a year ago now, wasn't it? It was on the weekend. You had the Liverpool game right after at Villa, and because we were still quite new to being behind closed doors, we all kind of wrote that off as a kind of freak result. It doesn't look like that now in terms of what happened yesterday, but with the fans being inside, I don't know whether it is different. This is what I'm trying to get my head around, because at halftime, it was the loudest jeering that I've ever heard of a United performance at Old Trafford. But you've never felt, you know, you've never had that moment with like the guy off Arsenal Fan TV saying it's turning blood. It's never felt like that. You know, it's never felt like there's suddenly a groundswell where there will be significant opposition towards Solskjaer in the position. I mean, you saw the videos of him last night going collecting autographs, sorry, like signing autographs for 10 minutes after the game.
There was also, there was a vox pop on Sky though afterwards as well, where a lot of the fans were, maybe it was just the ones they picked out, they were calling for him to go. Now, not in the not in the sort of Arsenal fan TV type
or the Andy Tate
way, or the Andy Tate way for that matter, but they were still saying it's the end of the road for him. So that was the sense I was getting.
I think there's certainly a middle ground of United supporters who, against their best wishes, would say, it's probably not going to work out in the long term. But that is a kind of a strange kind of emotional bind that they're in, that they're trying to figure their way out of. And, you know, there's no better example of that than Neville, really, who's obviously slightly different because he knows Solskjaer personally. But there's still a degree of loyalty there, but also a slow realisation, I think, now that it's becoming unavoidable, that he's just not quite up to the task of taking them to the next level. Whatever good work you might say and you might feel that he's done over the past 3 years, he's just not up to the level of competing with Guardiola, Klopp and Tuchel.
One of the differences, as Mark alluded to earlier, is as well, is that you don't have, behind closed doors matches, you don't have 5,000 Liverpool fans in the ground singing Ole's at the wheel, and then clips of that being sent around, presumably, you know, everywhere after the game, and what that does in terms of the humiliation for United, for United supporters. Like, it is, last year was such like almost literally a hermetically sealed environment where it was a bubble. Nobody could get into it, and it created this strange laboratory style kind of existence for footballers. But this year, you know, that is a classic example of, you know, apart from whatever dynamic it affects on the pitch, I think there is just that sense of, okay, this is a laughing stock now.
Yeah, and do you think that might have been playing into the loss of discipline from United players? I mean, this was a real sort of feature of the game. I mean, Ronaldo setting the tone. I mean, the Ronaldo thing with Curtis Jones is unbelievable. He surely should have been sent off for that.
Yeah, I thought at the time he should have been sent off. Looking at it again, I was like, maybe not. But it is an act. It is a violent act. You know, the fact that the ball is there.
It was clearly not.
Well, it wasn't an attempt.
It's not like, I'm going for the ball. The ball is there, and he's kicking it because it's right there.
The ball was there,
he's
effectively kicking Jones. The ball was there, I think, to quote another Manchester United great. He was using the ball as a cover to kick Jones. Now, if the ball had been, without sounding like Alex Ferguson, if the ball had been at Jones's head and he went to kick the ball, and he kicked the ball, I don't think anybody would have seen it as anything other than violent conduct. Now, clearly there is a difference, and Ronaldo probably wouldn't have done it if it was at his head. But the intention wasn't to get the ball; it was to kind of injure him. And I think it did lead. It just sort of triggered. These episodes of indiscipline, and then Pogba's tackle on Keita.
Yeah, Ronaldo, I should say, Mark, had done an interview, which was quite interesting, before the game with Jeff Shreves, where he just talked about, like, how, you know, criticism just bounces off and just like the, you know, and he seemed to be referring to a lot of what, like, if you've seen these things that the Juventus players have been saying, Giorgio Chiellini, Leonardo Bonucci, both have said stuff like, yeah, you know, we kind of need to get rid of that guy. Bonucci's stuff in The Athletic was quite detailed about how, like, we started to sort of subconsciously relax, thinking, oh, we've got Ronaldo, give him the ball, he'll score. Forgot what we needed to do as a team. Also, he sort of started to take over the team. I mean, it's clear, like, what they were alluding to is basically the team became this sort of elaborate sedan chair to carry Ronaldo around and boost his scoring stats, and they feel as though they're better without that. This is going to be a big problem for Man United, isn't it? I mean, we can't, like, try and put all this on Ronaldo, what happened yesterday, but if I look at Solskjaer's record at Man United, what's kept him in the job this long is winning games like this. Okay, he hasn't actually won a league game against Liverpool, but he's beaten City, for instance, numerous times, or at least as good as Liverpool. And the format is always the same, which is to say he's got a team full of players who are working hard, and then he's got a couple of quick players up front, and everyone works to the last drop of sweat, and at the end they've managed to beat Man City. And now that you've got Ronaldo, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, totally. I think the striking thing, you know, Ronaldo is that kind of static centre-forward presence. And if you think about those games that you talk about there, it was often like Rashford or Dan James or Martial.
Lingard.
Split Lingard, yeah. So those players would split, they'd go wide, it'd be more unpredictable. If you've just got that static focal point as he is, as his game is now, then you need to take an entirely different approach. And I think you saw that in the way that it was the incoherence of United's system and the way they went about the game yesterday. I mean, we always talk about the pressing, and especially in regards to Ronaldo, and I think that's part of what he was referencing in that interview as well. I mean, I always think when we talk about pressing, it's almost like it's something that good teams do. I think Neville's criticised people before at United before saying they don't press, when in fact, you know, maybe it's actually better sometimes not to. Maybe it's better to hold your shape. Maybe it's better to think about your positioning, cover, block off passing lanes, do things like that. Because if you just don't have the personnel to do it, then it's not a good idea. And I did a piece on it like a couple of weeks ago, I think, and I looked at United in terms of last season, the pressing. And they did actually press pretty high. They had like fifth most, I think. When you account for possession, they had the fifth most pressures in the final third in the Premier League. It's only
and,
like
I think this season they're like in sixth place or something like that. And it's quite similar number, I think, to Man City when I saw this number. So it's not as though they don't really press.
So it's not as though they don't do it, but like when you look at how they do it yesterday, it's almost as though people are trying to compensate for the fact that Ronaldo doesn't. I mean, last season, the players that did it most last season were Cavani and Dan James. And those are the two players that have been most affected, if you like, by Ronaldo's presence, because one's dropped out of the team, the other's been sold. So instead, you have people trying to compensate, like Bruno for the first goal, where he charges around, gets completely out of whack, out of shape. And that triggers this whole thing where Greenwood steps up, where Wan-Bissaka steps up, McTominay's left there pointing at open space with nobody to mark, and Liverpool are through on goal. And it just felt like that was the best illustration that we've had so far of some of the systemic issues that Ronaldo brings.
But that was such a dramatic moment, wasn't it, right? Yeah. That to me was like, it looked as though, as you've been sort of suggesting, they were kind of answering the critics there. Like, this was United showing, come on, you know, we can do this. And sort of rushing headlong into this disaster. Like, you know, Liverpool didn't really even have to do anything apart from just sort of play simple passes to each other, and suddenly they're in on goal.
No, and like, I think that there's again, it's almost like there's been a conscious decision the last few weeks. They've heard that criticism. I think Neville referenced it, and I could see it as well in the second half at Leicester. They start almost, Solskjaer talks about, yeah, we want to press, we want to play on the front foot. They want to be seen to be doing something. But if you don't coordinate it and you don't actually plan it out and have those triggers and those moments when you know to go and when to stop and to stay, then you end up with the total shambles that it was yesterday, out of possession. And going back to those performances that you mentioned before, when they beat City and they held Liverpool in the two seasons where Liverpool went close to the title and then won it, they held them in these games. In those games, they were sat off, they were disciplined, they were tight, and didn't feel like they needed to prove anything, if you like, in that respect. But yesterday was just totally different.
When you saw Dion, I mean, you would have, like everyone else in the world of football, seen Paul Scholes's like prophetic curse on Wednesday night. You know, he's like, you do that against Liverpool, see what happened. And you know, never has like a prophecy come as true. You know what I mean? It's actually incredible how accurate that turned out to be. And it's not as though Paul Scholes has an amazing record of like crystal clear accuracy with his prophecies as to what's going to happen in the next game. But in this occasion, he did nail it. So when you saw that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had picked the same team, like Scholes had literally spelled it out in the form of a challenge, play that way against Liverpool and see what happens. And he'd already specified that what will happen is you'll be three or four goals down at halftime and you'll be out of the game. What did you think that was going through Solskjaer's mind? Why did you think he had sort of almost deliberately taken up this challenge?
Because I think I do think his brain is kind of scrambled at this point. I don't believe he ever has a really coherent strategy for where he wants, you know, Manchester United to go, and that's what made his comments afterwards about, you know, I'm not going to give up now when we're this close, kind of baffling. I do think there was probably a bit more cohesion to Manchester United when they did have that sense of counter-attacking, and they did do things like that. But I do believe that there was part of him that thought, I need to do this now with these players that I have. I need to put on, you know, to do whatever he believes Manchester United should be doing in these games. This is something he alluded to afterwards as well. You know, we're Manchester United. We're at home to Liverpool. We play on the front foot. Well, like, that's true up to a point, but it's not.
Has he never seen one of these games before? I mean,
yeah, I know. Well, that's, but it's also not even true of all of the Alex Ferguson era. Where,
of course, that's what I'm talking about. There's a reason why this fixture developed a reputation as being literally the worst game of football you could see for 25 years, because the managers in it, Ferguson plus whoever was managing Liverpool at the time, you know, they didn't want to lose the game, and both of the teams were being pretty conservative to begin with.
Yeah, I think it honestly do feel that he's in a situation now, and there did seem to me to be only two possibilities for this match. One is what happened, as Scholes predicted, or that it would go the way of all those other United Liverpool games that get built up so much and then turn out to be a huge disappointment. But I do feel that now, in the situation he is in it exposes, with the riches that he has, with the talent that he has, it kind of exposes more and more Solskjaer's lack of authority, his lack of a clear vision for what he wants a team to be, and just this sense of somebody kind of fumbling around, trying to do different things in different occasions, or do the same thing on different occasions and think that this will work out. And I think the bigger the job becomes, because, you know, you sign Sancho, you sign Varane, then you sign Ronaldo, and every step of the way there's this kind of sense of this, you know, unstoppable Manchester United commercial machine that can spend money, buy things, and in the middle of it is Solskjaer trying to kind of establish himself as the manager for this club. And the bigger it gets, it just makes, he remains the same size, which, and it, you know, it becomes clear that this is a manager who isn't big enough in personality, in what he wants as a coach, essentially. And, you know, he doesn't bring, and it's a kind of unfair to compare him to Klopp in some ways. It really is unfair, because they're not in the same, they're really not the same species as managers. You know, they're really not, like, they're different, they're doing different things. But you see Klopp's personality, you see how, and, you know, other good managers do it in different ways. Like, Klopp clearly has, like, you know, outsized Hank Scorpio style personality, but, like, but, you know, Guardiola has it, Tuchel has it, other great managers have that sense of bearing and authority, which also means when a result like this comes along, they can withstand it, because, you know, it happens, you know, okay, it happened to Wenger at Arsenal towards the end of the Wenger era, but it doesn't lead to all these question marks. And the reason it leads to so many question marks with Solskjaer is because there is no point when anyone actually feels that he knows what he's doing.
He sort of accepts the criticism. You know, it's, I like what you say there. I always go back to watch the Ferguson interview after the 6-1 just to remind myself of how he treated that. And basically he was like, the sending off was a joke. We played amazing football. The scoreline is impossible to understand. And that was it. you're like, whereas Solskjaer kind of takes the... accepts the criticisms, like, in the way that a normal person would, who was sort of talking about it. He's like, yeah, you know, that is a reasonable thing to say.
Well, the most articulate I've seen Solskjaer in recent weeks was when he actually explained when he knew the game became a damage limitation exercise. It was like, this is something he can recognize. You know, the game is over. We've lost it. And it's Like, yeah, again, there is like the fact that he is clearly identifying, defining when a defeat becomes a hopeless defeat, and that is something that he's standing there doing as Manchester United manager, kind of illustrates again the sort of the fatalistic kind of nature of his management.
Do the interviews matter, though? And I'm not even thinking just about Solskjaer here, but what about the players, Mark? Because Neville, after the match, is making a big play of how he wants to see the players front up now. Harry Maguire has to come out and, you know, basically don the sackcloth and ashes. And he wants to hear from Cristiano as well. Now, we didn't hear from Cristiano Ronaldo, as far as I saw, anyway. There was the Harry Maguire interview. What the fuck is he supposed to say?
Speak from the heart.
You know, it's like, that was terrible, not good enough. And then Jeff Shrews tried to get him to say it was embarrassing. And he was like, well, I would say it's not good enough. You know, I don't really know if any of this matters, what they're saying, what Solskjaer is saying, particularly what the players are saying. Is it not just all irrelevant PR?
Yeah. it's just more words thrown into the space, like about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United, and nobody that is going to front up in front of a camera after one of these games is going to ultimately decide whether he continues in his job. You know, the players can look at themselves, and I know Maguire was saying it's on us as individuals to look in the mirror or whatever, but I think yesterday you could not put, as poorly as some of them played, including Maguire, including Luke Shaw, including, you know, any number of them, you couldn't look at that and say it was on any single individual or any single individual is capable of turning it around. It's a collective failure, and it's collective issues that we've seen for years now that I just don't, you know, no amount of interviews or words that we just throw around are gonna solve. We should know that better than anyone because we've been saying it and we've been writing it for years.
What's the situation, Mark, within the club now? Because, you know, we've kind of read pieces through the season that, no, Solskjaer is going to be fine and, you know, he'll be there till the end of the season. There almost seems to be this assumption, or there was up until the last week maybe, that he'd be there, which I always found strange because I always thought, well, hang on, they're starting to come off the rails a little bit, and, you know, if they lose badly to Liverpool, surely that's going to put some pressure on. Is there any inkling from within the club that they're going to get rid of him over the course of this season?
No, as we speak this morning, early on Monday morning, the nature of these things is that there's a pretty consistent message all the way through until suddenly that changes. Like the latest as it is now is what Solskjaer was saying last night, that he's going to be taking training today, that they'll focus this week on putting things right. They have got a week. They're only playing on Saturday, so there's no midweek game this week. It gives them a bit more time, perhaps. But, I mean, we can only really go on previous experience of this. And it has always been the case that, well, with Moyes, it was after they could no longer get top four. It was the same with Van Gaal. Mourinho was a slightly different situation. I don't think that however bad it looks at the minute, and I would say that the performances are worse certainly than those last few days under Mourinho, but however bad it is on the pitch, it isn't quite as toxic. It isn't quite as, you know, just rotten really as it was in the final days of Mourinho, which forced their hand more so to move early. Look, everybody's earmarked this period of games that he had, October to November, as a time when he was going to come under be seriously tested if he wasn't going to pick up results during them. You would look at whether if they fail once again to get out of the Champions League groups after a much more reasonable draw than they had last year, then I don't know whether that would just put too much weight on the other end of the scale and tip them. But the whole thing with kind of succession and everything, who's out there, who could come in? I mean, everyone's talking about Antonio Conte, but I think now with clubs, it's difficult for these top clubs to really time things right and to get the succession right. And that's another thing that you could really level at, not Solskjaer, but the people above him, that there have been opportunities in the past where they could have struck and they could have moved quickly. And they may well end up being forced into a position where there's actually not a really viable alternative on the market.
What opportunities are you referring to?
Well, obviously with Pochettino before that, I mean,
if I can imagine the thousands of Manchester United fans jabbing their finger angrily towards an imaginary Mark Critchley and saying, did you not see what happened last night? PSG against Marseille, nil all, a man sent off. Things don't seem to be going great for him.
Well, I mean, look, that's the case, but PSG is a very different, a very specific situation. You're not telling me that if, like, 18 months ago when he was available on the market, that you wouldn't have moved for him at that time if you could have done that to get a manager who's got a Champions League final on his record, who overachieved with Tottenham beyond his resources, didn't underdeliver, which you could accuse Solskjaer of doing. But even like after that, there's, you know, Thomas Tuchel was available for a time. There's been options where they could have moved and they could have struck, but they haven't done it. And it leaves you in a position where, you know, you're almost kind of forced maybe to stick with Solskjaer now and see it out if you don't fancy somebody like Conte who could come in, you know, try and bend the club to his will for a couple of years, maybe win something one season, but leave you in a state that you don't want to be in afterwards. It's difficult, and timing is everything in planning managerial successions. Chelsea, Liverpool, City, they all got that right over the last few years, but they'll have that bridged across at some point soon. And United have just got stuck in a position where they're almost struggling to act and can't really act.
Dion, we should probably finish where we began with Liverpool, who did actually win this game. Do you think they're going to win the league? You know, one of the things from last night's, I mean, the game obviously was one of the best games, I suppose, in their history. In terms of the result and how it's going to be remembered and all the things that happened. But one regrettable aspect of it, I suppose, was two injuries to midfielders. They've already got a lot of injured midfielders. It's beginning to look a little bit like last season with a lot of injuries in one area of the field. It hasn't quite reached that point yet. But when you think about Salah and how important he's become, how important he's always been, I suppose, Mane as well, Keita and how important he's going. Remember, all those players are also going to be going to the Africa Cup of Nations, you know, and will be absent for weeks, you know, maybe 6 weeks. They've got a few problems. I mean, between injuries and the African Cup, it is actually hard to see how they've got the squad to keep this up.
It is an indication, first of all, of what Klopp has done and what they continue to do, that they're in this situation when they have Chelsea and Manchester City, whose resources kind of dwarf theirs, and that will become clear when they do lose those players. And I think it is very hard for Liverpool to sustain that because of that, because they don't have the backup. They once you get, you know, people talk, and I think it was a bit like people talk about how easily people slot in, and like that was a feature of what Liverpool did yesterday, that you know, the players who came in did know what they were doing. But then again, we saw Keita in the Champions League in midweek and he scored a great goal, but then was totally overrun in midfield. So the more they lose their key players, you know, the trickier it will be. So I still think, you know, they're going to be in the title race, and I think people were probably a bit too quick to kind of rule them out of it after what happened last season. But it's going to be tough for them to kind of keep going during those periods with Chelsea and Manchester City.
What do you reckon, Mark?
I think, yeah, I agree with Dion that people wrote them off a little bit too quickly. I think there's something like 8 games that those players going to the AFCON could miss. But so that is a huge hole to try and fill in the middle of the season. And I think their fixtures around then are pretty difficult as well. But they seem, they're just, in terms of their attack, I think, more than anything, you know, at a time when you've seen kind of City and Chelsea move towards this kind of system where they control matches and there's not a lot, not as much on the attacking end as you might potentially have been in the past. I know they've just had big wins this weekend, so it's not the best weekend to make that point, but that has been the case up till now this season. Liverpool just relentless and seriously impressive. I pre-season, I think like most people, you were expecting about third, clearly behind City and Chelsea from last season. But they look like serious contenders now, and I think it'll go close between them and City in the end. I'm still just about backing City, but yeah, I think it'll be tight.
Mark, Dion, lovely stuff. Thanks, Emil.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, lads.
Goodness me! He just kicked! Pink wants the fan. Eric Cantona has jumped in and scissor kung fu kick. A fan. Manchester United fans are coming across. I have never seen as disgraceful an incident as that in all my years in football. Eric Cantona should be thrown out of the game for that sort of incident. I care not one jot about his supreme talent. He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter.
All right, Ken, World Service members are the greatest people in the world. We know this, right? You don't need any telling. But if I needed any more evidence, I got it yesterday as I plodded around the lovely Kildare countryside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
During the Thoroughbred Marathon, 26.2. Well, every marathon is.
You're a Thoroughbred. Do you have to be a Thoroughbred to take part in this marathon?
Well, it was more about the fact that it's around horse racing country. But listen, there was a lot to shout. There were a lot of Second Captains fans out there. I was running with a few, but also on the sidelines, lots of shouts of, Owen, you're amazing.
Very good.
There was even one, Owen, I like you and I like your style.
Oh, nice.
Which, by the way, the people running beside me were like, what is this? Is weird. You know, what's going on here? Anthony O'Connell even put this video up.
Well done. Well done, Owen. Cheers. Come on, Owen. Keep going. Thanks.
Yeah, you see, you got to engage, Ken. You got to say thanks back.
It was nice, Owen. You remind me of Solskjaer signing autographs after the 5-0, except, you know, more triumphant than that. Dare I ask, Owen, about the time?
I'll get to that, Ken. I have got one World Service member in particular I need to thank. Yeah. A Kildare local by the name of Fergal Carey, home from London for the week. This man came into my life. This hero came into my life around the 21-mile mark. So I did one of these, right? I don't normally do this, but for some reason, we just went through the 21-mile mark and I turned around to the... There was one or two people running slightly ahead of me and I was like, come on, guys, only 5 to go. You know? I did that. Like Bruno Fernandes leading the press.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, guys. Some people do that. There's a lot of that in marathons. I'm just not normally the person that does it.
No.
It doesn't really feel natural to
me. Well,
fair
play to him. You know, you took on the leadership role.
I did, but I was completely ignored by the couple of people around me, except one guy who turned around and goes, ah, Owen. And I was like, oh, how's it going? And so I got talking. This is our mate Fergal, who wasn't actually running in the race. He just lived nearby, home from London for the week, but offers to pace me home, you know?
Oh, wow.
Much like Eamon Coughlin controversially pacing Jerry Kiernan to victory in the 1982 Dublin Marathon, which, of course, we all remember. So Fergal, yeah,
go on. You go on.
Well, Fergal had... I'd say for the first mile, he thought, Jesus, this lad's running pretty well. But from about mile 22 on, it got pretty rocky. So I'm not really sure what I could have done without Fergal. I mean, it did get to the stage. I should probably apologize just in case he sends in an egomaniacs email. It did get to the stage around mile 24, 25, where... He was chatting away and kind of asked me a couple of questions. I was like, Fergal, I can't speak. I can't talk.
Like, but I'm amazed. Like, is anyone talking towards the end of the marathon? I would have thought, no, not really.
This guy has quality, Ken. This guy has leadership qualities. He realized that he needed to, that I was staggering home a little bit and I just needed a bit of a G up, you know. But I didn't mind it. I said to him, I don't mind you talking. I want you to talk.
Yeah.
But I just can't speak back anymore.
Yeah.
So just tell me what I'm seeing. Basically give me a tour of the Kildare countryside, which is essentially what happened. It helped me a lot. So thank you, Fergal, and I hope your mum's 70th was a roaring success as well, as I'm sure it was. Now, Ken, as regards the time,
yes,
I told you last week I'd be happy with a time somewhere in the 3-hour 40s.
Yes.
And I ended up running it in 3 hours 50 minutes and 17 poxy seconds.
50:17. Well, listen, I want to tell you what. I think there might have been a mistake in the timing there. Is that an accurate time?
It's a chip time. Yeah, I've had a look, Ken.
There could have been 18 mistaken seconds inserted in there. But one rate of their own. You're my champion. I don't care if it's 3:40, 3:50, 4:10, 75
hours.
Well,
hang on, steady on. It wasn't 4:10. It was 3:50, which is, you know, my third best marathon time out of 7 marathons. And I look up the finishing times here. I was 180th out of 400 finishers.
You're aging like wine, Owen. Solid top 50% placing. You are my inspiration.
I blame the Curryverse for the 17 seconds. The Curryverse in Berlin on the first day. That cost me precisely 17 seconds. But there you go. Great stuff. And thanks to everyone who came out and cheered everyone on there in Kildare yesterday. I was about to say great fun. It was great fun for about 20 odd miles. That's it. Thanks, Ken. We'll be back
tomorrow. Thank
you, Owen. GA show. Thanks for listening. Talk to you then. Don't forget to sign up to the World Service, secondcaptains.com.
Owen, I like you and I like your style.
How That's the second time it's gone off. They never got home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.